This kept him out of the limelight most of the time, but he did attend the ill-fated 1924 Democratic National Convention, where he painstakingly walked on crutches to center stage to nominate Al Smith for president. He didn't make another public appearance until 1928, when he gave another convention speech for Smith. In a perverse sense, Roosevelt was lucky. By keeping out of the public eye while working the political angles behind the scenes, he managed to stay untainted, biding his time during a moment when the services of a progressive party were blessedly unwelcome. While no intellectual, FDR possessed a certain genius for gauging the political temper of the times. He read people very well and picked up tidbits of information through extensive conversations with a vast range of intellectuals, activists, politicians, and the like. He was a sponge, biographers tell us, absorbing the zeitgeist while almost never concerning himself with larger philosophical conclusions. He was, in the words of the historian Richard Hofstadter, content, in a large measure, to follow public opinion. In many ways, Roosevelt saw himself as a popularizer of intellectual currents. He spoke in generalities that everyone found agreeable at first and meaningless upon reflection. He could be, or at least sound, Jeffersonian and Hamiltonian, internationalist and isolationist, this and that, as well as the other thing. He was like a chameleon on plaid, groused Herbert Hoover. Roosevelt's slipperiness stemmed from more than people-pleasing. Until late in his presidency, his overriding imperative was to split differences, to claim the middle way. "I think that you will agree," he wrote a friend about one speech, "that it is sufficiently far to the left to prevent any further suggestion that I am leaning to the right." Once, when he was given two completely opposing policy proposals, he simply ordered his aide and Postmaster General, James Farley, to reconcile them. His favorite form of management was to pit two individuals or departments against each other with the same task. The problem with this sort of triangulation is that you end up moving to whatever you believe is the epicenter between two ever-shifting and hard-to-define horizons. Worse still, Roosevelt translated this approach into a de facto third-way governing philosophy. This, in effect, meant that nothing was fixed. No question about the role of government or its powers was truly settled. And it is for this reason that both conservatives and radicals have always harbored feelings ranging from frustration to contempt for FDR. For the radicals, FDR wasn't principled enough to commit to lasting change, while for conservatives, he wasn't principled enough to stand his ground. He planted his flag atop a buoy at sea, permanently bobbing with the currents. Unfortunately, the currents tended to push him in only one direction, statism, for that was the intellectual tide of the time. Today, many liberals subscribe to the myth that the New Deal was a coherent, enlightened, unified endeavor encapsulated in the largely meaningless phrase, the Roosevelt legacy. This is poppycock.